Thank you. I think that's a common theme we hear at the government, and I think we're getting tired of it. When we always hear that there's not enough money, there's not enough this, there's not enough that, there's always excuses as to why we can't have these things. But let me remind people that there's plenty enough money. And actually, in Hawaii, we're one of the most taxed, overtaxed states in the United States. So it is not that there is no money. And trust and believe, when you sit on the Finance Committee, you realize how much money is coming into this state. It's the priorities, yeah? When you prioritize, then there's always enough money for everything. And let me also bring in that it's a mentality. If we operate in the mentality of scarcity, we will never have enough. But if we operate in the mentality of abundance, you will always find ways to do what's most important. Because you're such a priority. Party number one is we need a house.
Now the next half.
And I will say it over and over and over again, that many island nations have found that this is the root of why their people disperse. This is the root of why they're unhealthy. This is the root of why they become incarcerated. This is the root of why they start to lean on substances that are addictive and abusive. And so housing people has to be the first priority. The second priority has to be wellness. It has to be. And is wellness connected to water? Absolutely. Is wellness connected to your ability to farm and live off your land? Yes. And it has to be a priority of education, and not just the kind of education that you're thinking about. Not just, oh, you got to go to college. I was a college professor at Leeward Community College 4 years before I did this job, and I actually said to people, college is not for everyone. Uh-oh, I said it. Yep, I did. Because it isn't. Some people like to go to vocational training. Some people like to work with their hands. For some people, their idea of education is something that we can't even fathom right now. That's why we have charter schools, because we're embracing different types of learning. And so if those priorities are actually put in order, you will see that all of a sudden there is money to do everything we need to. And if we incorporate the people and the community members, our efforts will be doubled, tripled, quadrupled in effect of dollars. And no, I'm not going to raise taxes. I'm going to be able to do this because we're going to actually prioritize and find ways to make more meaningful impact, public-private partnerships, utilize the money that we already have from the people, and make sure that that money goes farther.
Aloha. Okay, so for those of you following along, this is number 31 of the questions. So this relates to DHHL director criteria. Simply put, as governor, what will your criteria be in selecting the director of DHHL and appointments to the commission?
Well, I definitely feel like the theme we've heard and that needs to be addressed is that the voice of the beneficiaries needs to be important and permanent in the decision-making process. I've read through the Hawaiian Homes Act. I've read through many of the documents in the government, and it really is, I think, a disadvantage, a disservice to the beneficiaries to not have their voices be part of deciding the chair, the commissioners. I mean, how can we say that it's a democratic decision-making body when only one person decides? So it's something that, yes, could be changed into law, but maybe we don't. Maybe the governor says, you know what? I'm going to make a method whereby I'm going to collect the voices of the people. And if you know anything about me and my district, the way that I collect voices is very creative. I have town halls. I do online forums. I do Facebook polls. I do Instagram. So there's many ways to collect the voices of the people. And I think that the decision of the DHHL chair, who that person is, whether or not they embody and really understand the vision of the Hawaiian Homes Act, needs to be evident in their ability to hear the beneficiary's voice. You gotta believe that that's the most important part of what's missing right now, is the beneficiary's voice. And if that was part of it, then we wouldn't be where we are, because they would feel the pain and they would hear it. They would hear it from their people. So I know that it's not in state statute, but would I be making sure that commissioners and the chair are elected, or at least governed by a group of people coming together to give their input about the choice? Yes. Because I can't know everything about every homestead, so I'm going to lean on these homesteads to help me make that choice. I'm going to go into Molokai, ask them what they think, gather the people up, and see what we can do to choose the right commissioners.
Question number 8 for you guys following along. Hawaii's teachers need a champion in the governor's office to make sweeping changes to fill the high level of teacher vacancies in schools across the state. As governor, will you champion teacher housing, student debt forgiveness programs for local teachers, and working directly with the legislature to lead the nation to achieve respectable teacher pay?
Yes. As I stated before, not only was I a professor, but I did teach 5th through 8th grade, high school, college, and I think at the heart of who I am is that I'm an educator. And I know that it's very different for people when they watch me on social media or at the State House, because I tend to teach all the time. I love to teach because I feel like knowledge is power, and I feel like when you teach, that there's such a difference in a behavior change that can't be done through just changing laws. And so I feel like in order for us to really understand that, we have to make sure to place priority on teachers. I mean, priority means much more than just raising their pay. How about the fact that their medical is so dang high? I mean, let's talk about the whole package of what a teacher goes through. It's not just the salary. It's about the resources that they have to buy out of their own pockets. It's about the dental medical costs that they can't even afford. It's about the fact that most of them are staying long hours, spending time away from their own children because of all of these other things that aren't being addressed. So I would say, yes, that's one. Do I think there should be teacher housing? I think that there should definitely be a way for us to think about schools in communities with teachers and families that care about those schools. I'm a big advocate that curriculums and even the government within a school should come from its community, because then you're actually going to be developing curriculums based upon what you know about those children. Not a mandate from the state, not a mandate from the federal government all the way in Washington, D.C. that doesn't know anything about what we're going through. Something that's very community-based, so that the parents, the teachers, the community members feel a type of responsibility. They feel a type of kuleana to take care and to help at the school whenever they can. And so definitely, I'm down to champion it and change a lot of it.
Brain drain is a real social and economic capital loss characterized by highly educated and highly skilled individuals, which include college and vocational trade graduates, leaving the state for economic opportunities. It is a major economic and social inhibitor. As governor, what are your plans to address and mitigate brain drain, including any new economic opportunities? And further, would you support and fund a governor's jobs program that targets local graduates in one-year fellowships for college and vocational trade graduates returning home?
Recently, I had somebody contact me from Hilo about the fact that economic development, the opportunity for jobs, and even the creation of new jobs is something that the government's not focusing on. And I think when they say the word brain drain, what they mean is that, is it true, and you guys can kind of nod, is it true that our best and our brightest leave our state? Is it true that the best and brightest stay here? And is it true whether or not those people that are here feel like the jobs that they would want exist? And the reason why I'm saying that is because in order for us to create a continuum of people who get educated and are from Hawaii to want to stay here and work here, there has to be a way for us to create jobs that they would want to stay for. Yeah? And the kind of generation that we're raising, with lots of different ways that you can even work remotely, is it possible for us to look at different ways of increasing economic development? Absolutely. And I found in my district, one of the biggest things is that people are creating businesses and not necessarily knowing where the gaps are. There are huge gaps where if a business was created, it would automatically have business and thrive because no one's providing that service right now in the state. I can talk about recycling. I can talk about metal. I can talk about all kinds of things where we don't have a funnel of people that are actually going to be able to get a job in that field. And so I think it's a matter of us studying where the gaps are, making sure that the people who are here in Hawaii that want to stay and work, there are jobs that actually can give them income and salary for their family. And is it the job of the government? Yes, partially. Is it the job of all of us to make sure that we understand in the community how to create these opportunities? Yes. I think that in every community, we should see more entrepreneurs. We should see more creative local businesses keeping local dollars here.
Question 21. The legislature acted to mandate investments in 22,500 affordable units by 2026. This requires 2,250 affordable units to be produced every year over 10 years. In 2016, HHFDC reported to the legislature that 326 affordable units were assisted, and in 2017, 1,267 affordable units. At this rate, it would take 28 years to reach the 22,500 mandated by the legislature. As governor, what is your affordable housing investment or spending plan to make sure Hawaii hits the 22,500 unit goal on time?
I think that housing is definitely one of the concerns of our state, of our people, but I do think that our approach to it will never solve the problem. I do think that our inability to even set a goal of where to go and how we're going to get there is the start of the conversation. So if we talk about Hawaiian homelands, just for example, 22,000 people on the list. Did we even set a goal last year, the year before, 4 years ago, of how many people we're going to get off the list and a specific strategic plan as to how? I don't know. And if we have an affordable housing crisis problem, did we set a goal of how many and where and how we're going to do that? One of the programs that was made years ago that people aren't aware of is called Hula Mai. It's kind of like Sally Mae if you've ever done loans for a school. And it was created essentially to get loans, government loans, to people so that they can create affordable housing. Now, when it was first created, it was actually given to individuals. But if individuals were not able to qualify, put down the money, or even be able to utilize that. So is there a way to change Hula Mai where it can be given to local developers, where they can actually build small housing projects, 10 to 15 units in the area? Yes. Have people given up doing that? Yes, because it's actually not being lucrative enough for you to want to build something because it's not going to bring you any money. Per unit, you're losing dollars. Can we utilize more of the resources we have here instead of shipping in materials? Yes. Can we come up with strategies that don't look like houses in the mainland so that we can actually afford them here? Yes. Can we bring in local developers, and can we learn from other island nations who've already been through this problem? Yes. So I think that with this crisis that we have going on, one, we're not going to be able to solve the problem with the same mindset. Two, you're never going to be able to solve the problem if you don't set goals. Three, you better create a strategic plan that makes sense and that empowers local people, local families, local developers to make sure that this helps our economy thrive. There are leaks throughout our government that are making dollars leave, and that's why we continue to cycle in and out of this revolving door.
Aloha. This is question number four on the list relating to Olelo Hawaii. Hawaii was the first state in 1978 to recognize its native language as an official state language. As governor, will you give real value behind this official language, including fluency in the native language, as a preference in all state job qualifications when all other qualifications are equal?
Yes. As I mentioned earlier, not only do we speak it in our home, but my children do attend school. Why? Because I believe that by us learning our language, learning our culture, that it would make us stronger, not just as individuals, but as a whole nation. And I think that for me, making sure that these services and these opportunities are afforded in every government branch should have been done years ago. In the judiciary, in regular areas of the government that should be providing both English and Hawaiian interpretation. It's something that our government had agreed to, had said this is another official language, but have we supported it as such? Have we made sure that we actually are upholding it as such? No. And so I do think that we need a leader from the very top that's going to be able to put this as a priority, not just through the embodiment of speaking the language, but through the actions of making sure that each of the agencies understands how important this is. And not just for Native Hawaiians who can speak, for all Native Hawaiians. Because all of us, at one point in time or another, are learning more about our own language, our own culture, our own people. And so I do believe that it'll make Hawaii a better place.
Question 19. More than 22,000 Native Hawaiians are spending their lives on the wait list to receive a land award under the Hawaiian Homes Commission Act of 1921. Too many simply die on the list, never receiving an award. These homestead land awards can be made for a residential, farming, or ranching lot with or without infrastructure. As governor, what is your plan to eliminate barriers within state government at DHHL to issue not hundreds, but thousands of lease awards during the next four-year term?
Let's issue thousands. Let's do it. I'm excited to do this. I mean, I think that, you know, there's a lot of bureaucratic, unnecessary layers that are related into why perhaps the department can't execute the initiative to get people off the list. Do those bureaucratic layers need to be peeled back? Absolutely. I think in life, you always have to question, yeah? Question why certain things are happening, because if the vision of the Hawaiian Homes Act was to house every Hawaiian permanently to make sure that their wellness is taken care of as well as education. So if that is the vision, then we need to be doing whatever we have to get to that vision. So I would go back to the vision, because when you can't see a clear vision, then you let bureaucratic layers hold you back. You let excuses, you let lack of funding, all of these things that really, they're just excuses. You can get around it. I've seen developers downtown go like this, boom, 16,000 units. Yeah, and there's a reason why, and there's methods why. Is it impossible? No. Do you have to study it? Yes. Do I think that within the waiting list, we should set a realistic goal and actually get people off the list? Yes. And if it's not possible to get them off the list, then don't promise them that. Don't tell people that. And that's what I've told my community all the time. The government should not be saying stuff they cannot do. So if you can't do it, then say it. But if you can't do it, then set a goal, make a plan, make it transparent, get the people involved, and get as quickly to the end as you can.
This is question 10. Water is important to Native Hawaiians, and it is important to everyone. The state's obligation is to, quote, protect, control, and regulate the use of these resources is enshrined in the Constitution. Water use can be hotly contested between corporate and community interests. Do you believe our current approach to fresh water resource management is working? And as governor, how would you ensure a more balanced approach to water use throughout Hawaii between corporate and community needs?
If you're aware of the public land, the public trust doctrine, and this is old, if you look that up, it basically says that the needs of natives and residents of Hawaii should be prioritized over commercial needs for water. And then if you look back to the water code, I think that was like in 1978, it actually specifically states what we should be doing about giving access to water to everyone in our state. And I would revisit those items, all of us, and those who are in decision-making positions such as the Water Commission, Board of Water Supply, and really decide if we're really upholding those. And I say that because we've seen so many cases of water diversion. You know, when I was in Haena, in Kauai, north side, Limahuli, that's one of the very few streams that actually runs from the mountain to the ocean, hasn't been touched, hasn't been diverted. And because a lot of these streams are being diverted for whatever reason, that Board of Water Supply, Water Commission says we need to disperse it, what then happens? It doesn't flow all the way through the land like it used to. It doesn't actually help the farmers. It doesn't help the streams. It doesn't do what it used to do. And then all of a sudden they tell us there's not enough water. Well, then put the water back in the streams, yeah? And there's other ways that we can actually share. But we knew this example in Maui when it happened, that there was always this thing saying, oh, there's not enough water, there's not enough water. 45 billion gallons of water was leaking out of those irrigation ditches. We knew that. And they're still saying there's not enough water. They were mandated by the courts to put the water back in for the terraformers. Did they do it? No. So they had to do it again. Go ask BLNR to actually uphold what they said by putting the water back in. And for those of you who have followed the issue, you understand what I'm saying. The gist of what I'm saying is that is the way that the state is handling our water issues correct? No. Did I make it up? No. It's actually written into law, and I think we need to revisit what it says and how to make sure that we're prioritizing the people's need for water over commercial uses, and that we're actually making sure that the way the water is used is that we have a mindset of abundance, because there was plenty of enough water for decades in our state, and all of a sudden now we know more.
Mahalo, Representative Polo, we'd like to now give you your 3 minutes closing.
I want to thank the panelists. Thank you for choosing those very mindful questions. And thank you, Robin, for the 36 questions. I surely did do a lot of research this past week. Thank you for making me open every book in my whole office. I loved it. You know, I loved looking through those questions because it really made me think, you know, about some of the root issues of what we need to change in our state. And for those of you who are unaware of why I decided to run for governor, the reason why is because I believe that these systemic issues have affected us for generations. And I don't think that I can keep being a representative and keep watching that. Because as I go from community to community and I see the hurt, I can't keep doing this and be okay that we're not fixing the systemic issues. I feel like in order for us to see a change, we needed someone to stand up and say, I'll go do it. As you know, I'm a music teacher, and I'm way out of my comfort zone, but everything inside of me tells me that this is what I have to do right now, and I'm gonna do it. I'm gonna do it with all my heart. And I'm going to knock doors, and I'm going to walk streets, and I'm going to do things that other people might see as degrading, because the greatest among us should be our servant. Because public service is at the root of what our leaders should understand. I believe that not just Hawaiians, but all the people in Hawaii have been waiting for a change, for a leader. And I hope that you find that And if you do, support that person. Because it won't take one person to change this. It'll take all of us. And upon this happening, I'm going to call all of you. And I'm going to ask you what you can do to help. Because this has to be all of us. If one person thinks that they can make Hawaii better, they're wrong. It has to be all of us. And I hope that you can feel inside of me that I'm not perfect. I've only been a legislator for 4 years. I'm a non-politician. People say I should have waited 12 more years, 25 more years, but I can't do that. I can't wait those many years and then look at my kids, the generations to come, my grandkids, and say, I'm so sorry. I could have stood up and did something, but I was afraid. I could have stood up and did something, but people told me to wait. I'm not going to say that. I'm going to live my life with no regrets. I'm going to stand up and do the best that I can for the people that I love. And I truly do. And I hope that you guys can feel that. This is much bigger than me running for governor. This is about finding someone that loves the people enough to truly serve them. Thank you so much. Aloha.